Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
So I did a writing tonight. It's called The Age of Disintegration, and it kind of talks about, or at least points, how it feels in our life. Things feel like they're crumbling apart, you know, in the world, maybe that is anyway. And I think this is a very common theme for so many of us in the world today. And I think there's good reason for it, you know. I don't necessarily believe that it's true. I don't think things are falling apart. But I think that we, as this species called human, is getting a little crazier, you know. Or at least there's more of us to show us the crazy side, you know. Something like this. They said this time happened from the dawn of the Buddha, that this age of disintegration has been coming along, you know. And some of that makes sense, you know. Shakespeare said that hell is empty, all the devils are here. And kind of the way I see that is that all the devils are here. I don't see you guys as devils today. I don't see anybody as devils today. But I see our thoughts becoming very dangerous, you know. I mean, they've always been that way, but this is at the core of, I think, Buddha's teaching, is that life is wonderful. Our thoughts make it different, you know. Master Dogen said that there is only one reality, but two possible perceptions. And I think that's kind of the core of the writing that I wanted to do tonight, is the teaching of what are these two perceptions, you know? And how do we see it for ourselves? How do I see where I'm at and where do I fall in those, in that way? Donan always reminds everybody, one of my favorite lines from an old Tibetan prayer, of the aspiration prayer of Samatha Bhadra, is the miraculous displays of awareness and unawareness. And if I see Dogen's writing correctly, I think this is really what he's talking about. We can live in a state of unawareness, almost blissful unawareness for some people, or we can wake up to this greater fact of life, this greater thing in life, you know. It's kind of like living your whole life like you only know a mud puddle, you know. You've never seen the ocean. And from that state, life will look kind of dirty and small, you know. But if you see the ocean, and you know the way the ocean works, and you know the way the entirety of life comes back to the ocean, then this can open our minds, you know. This can open something up for us. It's easy to see the negative. I just want to say too, I think sometimes I just ramble on, and if anybody ever has something that grabs them or they want to ask a question, just jump in, you know. You can raise your hand or throw something at me if I'm not looking. It's easy to see the negative, especially your specific taste, if you will, of the negative. The ones that really grab you, you know. We all have our little special jewels, you know. Almost as if we are hardwired to look for it, to look for the negative. From a survival aspect, it's true. We're always looking unconsciously for what is wrong. The animal species called human, like all other animal species, is hardwired to scan for danger at all times. Every moment of our life, almost every moment of our life, we're hardwired to do this. Usually when you're home by yourself and you're sitting and vegging out on the TV, you're not too worried about it. Unless you see something on television that hits that little button, you know. We are hardwired to look, to scan for danger. It's happening automatically. When you look into another person's face or into a crowd, there is an almost unnoticeable scan for danger in facial expressions, body postures and movement, sounds and energies, both obvious and subtle. Yet most of us wouldn't consider ourselves in survival mode, right? Most of us wouldn't even think that we're in some kind of survival mode. This is just what I do all day long, you know? This is how we turn into, this is why we feel so guilty about judging, but judging is such a natural act for us. It goes back to this survival instinct, you know? I'm unconsciously scanning everything and everyone to make sure it's safe for me. You know? So most of us don't really notice that we're in this constant state of survival until we don't feel so safe. And then all lights are on, right? The control panel is going off. This is what I love about Buddhism is Buddhism really made me want to crawl into the brain. You know, maybe in another lifetime I'll be a neuroscientist or a neurosurgeon where I can get in there and actually see what's happening. In this lifetime I don't think that's happening. But I'm so enthralled about the way this human mind operates. And this is what Buddhism really gave me. This is what Zazen gave me, is this fascination. The fascination with pleasure comes directly from this almost constant sense of threat. Did you hear that? The fascination of pleasure comes from this almost constant state of threat. Why? Because I never feel settled. So if you don't feel settled, you want what? Something to make me feel settled. All the time. I don't know if you guys see it. Mine is never off. It's always like this. I'm the hungry ghost, you know. I'm always looking for something. So the fascination with pleasure comes directly from this state of threat, this constant state of threat. And we have to see the difference. And this is what it comes back to that first statement. The miraculous displays of awareness and unawareness. Because what's most of our threats? It's not even real. It's the fancied threat. Somebody looked at me. You ever walk into a room and two people are sitting and yapping and they look over at you and then they go back to yapping? What's the first thing you think? What are they talking about me for? You know? Instantaneously, I think somebody's after me. Instantaneously, I must have done something. You know? We all have a little bit of that guilty conscience. And if you've been a lousy person in your life, you probably have a little bit more of it. Probably have a little extra. A sense of guilty conscience. So this fascination and this drive to feel good all the time, this drive for some sort of pleasure, is of course all happening in the unconscious mind. It's happening behind our sense of awareness. What am I aware of? Something. Right? I want something. I'm not aware of why that's happening or where that's coming from. Because of this unconscious sense of danger, there is always an unconscious desire to be rid of it. It's so wild when you start to go back and see what's happening, you know? And so what better than to find something to feel good? Meditation is then nothing more than an entrance into this unconscious, and that is exactly that part of ourselves that the thinking mind is unable to tap into. Does that make sense? So the beauty of Zazen, the beauty of really trying to get quiet, is that when it happens, mostly accidentally for us, is that wisdom all of a sudden has a little bit of room to breathe. And wisdom goes, you've been doing that thing your whole life. That's why you've been doing that thing your whole life, you know? When we step out of the fight, when we step out of the ring, we start to become aware of these inner workings, if you will. So meditation is nothing more than an entrance into this unconscious mind. Not this mind, the unconscious mind, somewhere is down here, you know. And that's the part that's the challenge. Because we're so mind dominated, you know, we're so thought dominated. I'm so analytically dominated that every time I go for the answer, I'm trying to use the same old mess to find the answer, you know. This is what Einstein said, the mind that creates the problem is not sufficient in solving it, you know. And I always add yet, because I think eventually, when you start to put the pieces together, then you have something to work with, you know. It's kind of like, it's very similar to playing an instrument. If you don't know how to read music, you'll never be able to play in a band. Or you'll never be able to play in a band that relies on sheet music, right? If you learn how to play the guitar by yourself, you can start your own little band. You may not know how to read music, but you can still enter into that. But I still have to go through all the processes to get to the point that I can play that instrument, you know? This is all a strange game of connect the dots, you know? But even if you connect them all correctly, you may still not be able to see or recognize the picture. So our practice is not just for the learned, not just the intellectual, or not just that of the psyche. Its major function is in the experience, is in the felt, lived experience of this, which ultimately comes through stillness or moments of awareness in motion. Moments of awareness in motion, which is also a form of stillness, like washing dishes awareness, sweeping the floor awareness. When we really show up to what we're doing and we're fully mindful, fully aware, fully present to that thing, now I see something beyond just the mundane of sweep the freaking floor, you know? All of a sudden it's a beautiful thing. The body and the mind is working simultaneously to move the broom in such a way that I'm actually able to clean the floor, you know? So much going on, you know? The Buddha said that the first keys to our suffering are attachment, aversion, and illusion. Not because those are our real problems, but because the real issue is so difficult to see. And I fear to say, maybe impossible to see. For some people, impossible to see. We instead look to escape our confusion or sense of threat towards something pleasurable, and so it is very easy to see how in modern times, and in times of old, those ways of distraction are endless. But definitely more immediate today. More instantaneously today. You don't have to be bored at all today. All you have to do is go like this. All right, back to it. I don't have to be bored for one moment in my life if I want to live in that way, you know? So our distractions are more immediate today. And I think that's probably why we see more separation today. We see more division today. We see more isolation today. It's so easy, you know? So easy. So what is the real issue, you know? Anyone? We're in this state of threat all the time. And what's the state of threat? It's the illusion. the state of threat is almost always an illusion. If we were cavemen, it might be different. We might actually be trying to be eaten by tigers and dinosaurs, and you know, you might be afraid of everything you eat because you don't know if it's going to kill you or not, right? But today we don't have any of those issues. So what are the threats today? You know? It's the fancied idea that something is going to go wrong, you know. Roshi would always talk about, we've moved from survival of the physical body to survival of the emotional body. What you say to me will kill me as quick as a knife, you know. Why? Why have we become so sensitive to that? Maybe we always have been. Or maybe the ego has just shifted energies, you know. It's not so worried about the physical body anymore because it doesn't really have to be. This is why people just overeat themselves to death. The ego has lost its sense of what's really important, is to take care of this thing, you know. And it has simply shifted into this emotional threat, the emotional body. So to come back to this, the prayer, the aspiration prayer of Samantabhadra, the writer wrote it so well of how this begins for all of us. In Christianity, they say we are born of original sin. And Buddhism is almost similar, but unfortunately the word sin carries so much shame behind it, or so much negativity behind it. It's not a great word, you know. If you see the real meaning of the word sin, it's actually pretty neat. It means to miss the mark, you know. And when I see it that way, that makes sense to me. Like, I miss the mark that there's a whole world here, not just me. You know, that there's this whole dance of life going on, not just what concerns me. You know? So maybe from that place of sin, that makes good sense. So I'll read this little section of this prayer. This prayer is very long. It's like four pages long, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. At first, since deluded sentient beings do not dawn as awareness in the ground, they are absolutely mindless and oblivious. Exactly that is unawareness, the cause of delusion. From within that vacuous swoon, a fearful vague cognizance stirs. From that, self and others, as well as amenity, arise. Through the gradual blossoming of latent tendencies, samsara unfolds, taking its natural course. Due to that, the five poisons of the afflictions flourish, and the karmas become an incessant flow. Thus, the ground of sentient beings' delusion is mindless unawareness. Hence, through the aspiration prayer of myself, the Buddha, may all recognize awareness itself. So he outlines the problem, and in one short sentence, outlines the solution. Embrace this thing called awareness. How do I do that? You know? I can't think about awareness. Now I'm just thinking more. I must experience this thing called awareness, you know? And I think this is the great beauty of Zazen, and also the great challenge of it, you know? I know for myself, I only accidentally bumped into awareness, you know? Because I just sit here thinking the whole time, oh, this is stupid. Oh, my legs are killing me. You know, I'm just going through this constant thought, one after another, and grabbing onto the ones I love and pushing away the ones I hate. And then all of a sudden, one day, it just like, it all fell away. And before I knew it, I was like, oh my God, what was that? And then back into thought, you know? But that one little pause, that one little moment, was enough to say, man, there's something to this, you know? There's something happening beyond this thinking mind, beyond this rationalizing, analyzing mind. There's something more to it. I mean, we can break down this whole prayer, which I want to do a little bit of it, but I'm not going to do the whole thing, but it really outlines how we are born with ignorance. We are born, I don't always love that word ignorance, especially in America, it carries a pretty negative undertone to it. But if we see ignorance as not knowing, or as we get older, Chogyam Trungpa said it beautifully, the willful looking away, you know. As we get older, my ignorance changes. And this is what happens with our afflictions as we get older. They just morph. They become a little bit more sophisticated, you know. This is why we get better at telling lies. Or we get better at conflicts, right? I want to win this conflict. So we go through the whole story, and I'm going to pick out the real good jewels of the fight so I can win the fight. I'm not concerned with resolving the fight. I think if I win the fight, then it's over. But who wins that? Nobody. Nobody wins that, you know. So our karma and our afflictions, they just morph as we stay alive and we grow, especially in that sense of own awareness, you know. So it comes into this whole sense that we are all born with this thing called ignorance. We are all born without this knowing of the totality of life. And he says exactly that is unawareness, the cause of delusion. So what happens as this cause of delusion kind of takes hold in the human, from within that vacuous swoon, which is like this crazy mess I see it as, you know, like the inside of a vacuum cleaner, you know. A fearful, vague cognizance stirs. And what happens is we're all children. We're always just on the border of terrified, right? I remember always being scared as a little kid, you know. But then I'd put on my big boy pants and act like I wasn't so. But inside I was still like, oh my God, you know. Always scared of something. You know, especially something new. So this cognizance, this constant thought of something dangerous. From that, self and others, as well as enmity, arise. So as this fear really grips us, and it becomes a part of our rationalizing and analyzing mind, we start to look at each other as the cause of this fear, right? My mother yells at me, something must be wrong. This kid doesn't like me, and something must be wrong, you know? And so we start to look at everything outside of us as the cause for this fear. And yet, the fear was simply arising within us. And this is the state of delusion, you know. We forget that we are the other. There is no other. We forget that we exist on the same plane all the time. From the moment we are conceived to the moment we turn back to dust, we are playing on the same field, all of us, you know. And then as this takes hold in each of us, our karmas start to come to life, the five poisons start to take hold. And the five poisons are attachment, aversion, dullness, pride, and envy. That's one definition of them anyway. There's a lot of afflictions, actually. Actually, they say in the Yogacara that there is 20 afflictions and 10 aspirations within us, or 10 benefits within us. So it's easy to see how we so quickly fall into this negative state, you know, this negative sense of mind. No matter how much we fool ourselves, it's always there, it's always running, you know. Due to that, thus the ground of sentient beings' delusion is mindless unawareness. And basically what he's saying here is that we are unaware of this whole process that has come to be on its own natural state. Does that make sense? Naturally, our delusion arises. Naturally, our fear arises. Naturally, our separation arises. Just like your toes grow, just like your hair grows, naturally this happens, you know? Hence, through this aspiration prayer of myself, the Buddha, may all recognize awareness itself. I always think about, you know, maybe what Shambhala looks like, Shambhala or whatever, however you say it. City of enlightenment, you know. And I bet it looks something very similar to, as a child is born, it is loved by everybody and taken care of by everybody. That's it. They allow the child to grow, they allow to run it, to let it run, to let it bump its head, to let it act like a child, but they love it all the same. Crazy, mellow, beautiful, ugly, all the stuff, they love it all the same, you know? To me, that's a state of enlightenment. If the whole village can do that for every child, that's a state of enlightenment, you know? But I know that in our state that we are in this place and in this time that we are in, that does not happen. You know? Doesn't happen. And if you're one of those kids that it didn't happen for, well then all of this stuff just intensifies. I sit and I work with so many people that have trauma. I mean, I thought I had bad stuff when I was a kid. Some people have nightmares, you know? And learning about how to take care of that, learning to help others to take care of that is such an amazing process. And as we grow as a species, as we evolve, which I think we're just now starting to tap into some kind of emotional and mental evolution. We haven't done that yet. Not even close. I mean, if you look at modern psychology, it only started at the end of the 1800s and only really started to take foot in the early 1900s. So our sense and our idea of what's happening in the mind is very small, you know. The Buddhas and the wise men and the sages, they tapped into it. They tapped into it without ever picking up a book. So I have to say, how did that happen? You know? How are these guys able to, in these deep states of samadhi, see images of something like the yin and yang, or the sacred geometry images that they know to exist in the world, you know? How did they tap into this? Because they are the world. When you step into samadhi, you become the whole thing. And so, this practice is far more than just this idea of, oh, I'm going to sit so good right now. You know, it's far more than this. If that's just what you're here for, you're in trouble, you know. So I think as we evolve as a species, and if by chance you bump into the Dharma, which we've all by chance bumped into the Dharma, something magical can happen. And I just want to read this little excerpt from John Dido Lowry. When I listen to the precepts, the vows, and the service dedications, when I feel my body in the vows, when I connect with the Buddhas and the ancestors in the daily liturgy, I am touched by an incredible sense of gratitude for having the opportunity to hear, experience, and participate in these teachings. I know it is a gift that I will never be able to repay. It makes me wonder how often any of us appreciates how profound Zen practice is. Do we really hear it? Do we sense it? Do we feel it with our bones, right down to the marrow, with every cell in our bodies? Or is it just another fling? A Dharma fling. It is vitally important to appreciate this life. In one sense, that is what taking refuge in the three treasures really is about. Appreciating our life. Appreciating all life. Waking up again and again to that feeling. People ask, how can I deepen the teacher-student relationship? It's like asking, how can I love? Is there a book of instructions on how to love? Does a baby get taught how to love its mother, the flowers, the earth, and the rain? In Zen training, we say, really put yourself into it. But what does that mean? It means to take refuge and to be protected by the three treasures. To take refuge and be protected by the three treasures. And so if we find ourselves in this place, right? We find ourselves born into this vacuous swoon, all of us, right? Then what's the solution? I know for myself, I didn't find that by myself. I didn't find the solution all by myself. There are some beings that this happens to, you know? And in an amazing way, some of them have been alive in our lifetime. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh, Master Thich Nhat Hanh. Ram Dass was another one. I mean, his was through LSD, but I tried that one too. I just got crazy. But so there's been all these amazing teachers, some in our lifetime and some just throughout eons. If we find ourselves in this state, if we find ourselves stuck in this state of something is off, well, now all of a sudden something makes room for us to look, you know, to ask. And then maybe, just in that chance, somebody hands you a book or somebody says, hey, there's this really cool meditation, you want to go to it with me? That's what happened for me. If we by chance become aware in this lifetime, and not all do, the old seed has taken root. That which has always been is awoken. This is where the spiritual path opens. This is why the Buddha called it the noble truth of suffering. We awaken to a half life and finally realize it's not the whole life. Now we can take refuge in Buddha. We can take refuge in Dharma. And we can take refuge in Sangha. It's already here.